This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 Hive M, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. As I mentioned earlier today's show, I have the honor of speaking to Professor Claudia Gray, who's a pediatrician who wrote the manual on parenting that we've all wanted to have in the end of the day. But specifically today, I do want to talk about, because it's a very impressive, wonderful book where she really, like, it covers, first of all, it starts off by covering each age kind of and what you want to know about each age from already pregnancy, what you need to know. See, I only read those books. I should have read further when I had children. But then about the first 3 months, it's really, and it kind of goes age by age. And then for me, my favorite part, which is really a great section, she also has like on different sicknesses that you want to, and illnesses that you have to look at. I want to see what it's specifically called. Patches, scratches, sneezes, wheezes, and all things allergies. And it's like really, and then an overview of common illnesses and medication. That's my favorite section. Where it really is like where you can, you know, like all those things that you wonder is like, what is this? And then some people share the picture on Instagram and Facebook that we don't want to see. Again, then you just go here and you're like, oh, look there. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So let's start off with talking about that. This, Claudia, this book covers, do you want me to call you professor?
No, Claudia is good. Claudia is good. Thanks, Yolandi.
But this book does really cover a very broad age range, like I mentioned, from pregnancy to teens. Mm. What inspired this comprehensive guide, this manual that we all craved?
Thanks, Yolandi. Yeah, so I've called it Dr. Gray's because I am actually a Dr. Gray, believe it or not.
Yeah,
real parenting and pediatrics. And I think I was inspired for two main reasons, Yolandi. The first was, I guess, the experience, because I've been now a pediatrician for over 20 years. So I've literally learned it all, seen it all, and taught it all. And I think that's so important these days to have the experience and to be able to teach it back. Secondly, within that experience is also my experience as a parent. So I have 4 kids of my own, and they range from 10 to 20. Almost.
Oh, wow.
So they span a lot of the ages, and I've been through it myself, so I know what's real and realistic and what's not realistic. And then the second main category which inspired me to write this book is that this sort of bank of experience that I've built up has now coincided with the rocketing of digital information. So now there is so much available online at the push of a finger. There are apps, there's AI, there are websites. And although it's fantastic, it can also be quite overwhelming. And it can also sometimes be nonsensical because the information out there is only as good as its source. And sometimes the source of this information is influencers who have popularity and likes, but not necessarily the experience. Sometimes the information is sensationalistic, but not necessarily grounded. So that's why I thought, let me write an old-fashioned book, a tangible manual that keeps it real and covers really, it's like a whistle-stop tour through the most important aspects of parenting, of pediatrics, of developmental stages, of common illnesses. So it's a medical book as well as a parenting book all together in one tangible manual, which I hope will become trusted, a trusted source.
I mean, honestly, it also really looks pretty that I also.
Yeah. I didn't really want the photo of me on it, but the publishers insisted.
But it really, it does actually, it's even the inside, it's very kind of beautiful to look at as well, which also helps, I feel. But it really is, I love the idea of it. I also really like the fact that I always say to parents that often when you're stuck in that like small baby age, you kind of only see the trees around you. You don't realize the long game of it. And that's yes. why I also actually really love your book, that it covers not just babies. Yes. Yes. It covers all the way to teens. Yes.
Also, give that perspective. You're 100% right, because a lot of the baby books we have really only do cover certain aspects. So either a certain age, like 0 to 1, or the toddler, or a certain aspect like weaning or eating or behavior. And I kind of thought this is quite hard, because a lot of it is integrated. A lot of the medical condition and the parenting, the behavior are integrated. So I've tried to do that it's all under one roof.
No, and it really is. It really helps to also, like I said, just give that perspective as well, that yes, you might feel stuck in this thing now, but if you go to the next thing, then you can see, oh no, but then there's something else for me to worry about.
Just when you think you've got something whacked, then the next chapter comes along. Yeah, that is true.
It's very nice. But I mean, it really is, like you said, like parents are so bombarded with information. And to yes. be honest, I'm hoping that this is going to become a trusted guide, and that people are going to reflect on this, because it is really, sometimes I'm even surprised at how easily parents follow ChatGPT, how easily they follow a 5-second video out there.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, obviously those things are what's adding on to these myths that people also follow.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's similar for you, that's one of the reasons, just this information overload? Or I feel because of the information overload, actually what happens is that some parents just block it all out.
Yeah, maybe. But I think you're right. With all the ChatGPT and this and that and the influences, a lot of our information, we talk about myths in childhood, and it's ironic that those aspects that are dramatized or sensationalized are often taken on board by parents, and the negative press. And that sticks, and it sometimes sticks from generation to generation. So there are a lot of concerns about the negative press that's often around parenting or childhood, and then parents holding on to that and thinking that's the Bible. In my book, I actually say you need to have a natural fact checker for everything you look at online. And those are the four S's. And the first S is it sensationalistic? Because, if there's sensationalism, you always have to moderate it and think again.
Yeah. And
while they're trying to sell their own product, then you have to kind of also think, is this information true, or is it perhaps biased? Is there scientific evidence to back it? And the last S is, do they have a strong stand for or against something? Then you also might need to moderate that. So having these four S's in mind when you read anything online can help you to actually tease out the sensationalistic from the real.
I love that. I actually think we need to use those four S's with everything.
Yes, we do. And I mean, I'm victim. How often do we see this wonderful thing on Facebook that's going to make us look young in 2 weeks? And we fall for it because it's a sensationalistic thing. We buy the product.
Yeah. And also even like articles where you were talking about then these articles that is like very like passionate about one thing that's now happening. And in the end, they're selling exactly that.
Exactly.
I'm thinking like really from my perspective with sleep training. And then this person's like, sleep training is a devil and it's going to harm this and this and this. And then in the end, it's like, here's a gentle sleep training method for you to use. Contact me.
Yes, yes. And it may all have validity, but everything needs to be taken in moderation.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you're on 101.9 Hive M. This is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And today we are talking, obviously, always parenting. But today specifically, I'm talking to Professor Claudia Gray. It's cool that your surname is Gray. I feel like
I know.
Gray's anatomy. You've probably heard it all before.
I have.
If you've just joined me, don't despair. Remember that this show and all of my shows are available as a podcast on Hive M to go and listen to. As always, I do want you to be part of the conversation. So if you have any questions to ask Dr. Graham, please do send us a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. literally, I feel you can ask anything about parenting. I think between the two of us, especially considering just the fact that she has four children, I think she's going to be able to answer the question. So please, do challenge accepted. Come on, bring it on. We'd love to hear that.
Bring it on.
On that note as well, please remember this show is brought to you by Baby City. So if you haven't seen yet, they have Black Friday. And Black Friday, if you remember going to the Baby Expo, you maybe don't remember it because your children is not as old as mine. But if you're out there and you went to the Baby Expo just to buy diapers from Baby City, this is why you want to get to the Black Friday specials. So go check it out. They're online and in store. You can get some great Black Friday specials at Baby City. As always, their prices are great, now even greater. So please go check it out. Some great things. And we're talking very much about today, specifically childhood myths that come up. That we all get bombarded with. And already Dr. Gray has helped us kind of get through that sensationalism of the four S's that she mentioned to get through that type of things. But what is like some of, let's start at the beginning kind of thing. What is one of the biggest myths that you feel or wish that parents would let go of?
Well, okay, so let us start right at the beginning with the newborn baby, because obviously the myths are different throughout the childhood stages. But with the newborn baby, the one myth really that often still stands is that when a baby cries, it's almost being naughty, and you can train a baby not to cry. And I'm now talking about babies sort of between 0 and 4 months. So this is a myth. Babies' brains are actually still so immature at that stage. Their biology, their neurology is so immature that they cannot learn cause and effect yet. That happens from about 4 months. So the very young baby doesn't cry thinking, oh, now mom's going to come. Let me cry because mom's going to come. They cry because it's their only form of communication. So every time they cry, you need to tend to them and tend to their needs. And those needs may be as simple as being hungry, when the cry often escalates, like a little piggy, a little tiger. They may just be wet. They may be cold. They may be hot. Sometimes it's a bit more complicated than that. They may cry because they are overstimulated or overtired. So get to know your baby's cry and tend to every single cry, because actually our job for the newborn babies is attachment, bonding, and respond to bond. I say that throughout my book. You've got to respond to give them the trust that you are their parent. You will tend to their needs. So that's the basic biology. And likewise, we can't manipulate them into a routine or into self-soothing that young. But that all changes at about 4 months. You've heard about the 4 month sleep regression. Yeah. And that's because babies' neurology suddenly becomes so sophisticated that they can, if I cry, mom and dad will come. And that's nice because I'll get cuddles. So from 4 months onwards, this changes. And then you can teach routines and you can teach self-soothing.
And I mean, that really adds on to so much about, you know, my actual job of helping children to sleep. This is my side hustle.
Yeah.
I always say. But because lots of parents are often like, and I mean, moms phone me and then they would tell me like, I'm feeding my baby to sleep. And I'm talking here now, 3 month old or 8 week old. Yes, I know I shouldn't be feeding my baby to sleep or rocking my baby to sleep. And then that perception that, because people are like, oh, you're spoiling your baby.
Absolutely. You can't spoil a young baby. You can't. No. The more you hold them, the better. Hold on tight, respond to them, build that attachment, because that's the basis for attachment for the rest of their lives with you. So it's a precious time. Just sacrifice, you know, just remember, you're not going to manage to do much extra during that time. Lower your expectations. It's all about survival with your baby at this time and attachment.
Yeah. And I mean, it really is, like I said, I mean, you cannot spoil a newborn baby. You need to be with them. You need to spend time with them. And like I said, they're like mechanics don't even allow them yet to be able to learn these things. Absolutely. I call the newborn period, I call the training period.
Yeah. It's the fourth trimester, isn't it? So you almost need to think that they are actually still inside you.
Yeah. And I always say to parents that you can't teach them bad habits at the end of the day in that period. You also can't teach them good habits. It's also the flip side of it. But that's why it's a training period, because you as a mom can start practicing like bedtime routines and those things. And sometimes you'll get it right, sometimes you won't. But that's okay, because it's your training period.
Absolutely. And it's your baby. And don't compare it to someone else's baby, because every single baby is wired differently, as is every single parent. So it's a unique partnership.
Yeah. So if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 Hive M, and this is Bump and Beyond. And today I'm talking to Professor Claudia Gray, and we're talking about busting those myths that we've heard about. So many. We've already spoken about newborn myths, and you can't spoil a newborn. It's a fact. Now we've heard it from both me and Dr. Gray. But one of the other things that I always wonder about, because this is also the number one reason for bad sleeping, and I find that it's not always necessarily the culprit, but teething. Yeah. How bad is teething really? And I really wonder about it, because I want to just say from personal experience, my kids are already 12 and 14. When they got their permanent teeth, I actually asked them, does it hurt when the teeth come out? They're like, no, I don't even notice it. How is it so painful for a small child?
So, Yolandi, that is one of the real myths of pediatrics. And it's actually right that your secondary teeth, so when you develop your first molars at the age of 6 or 7 and et cetera, it's not actually that painful. But for babies, the primary teeth, because it's the first time that channel of teething is being created, is actually incredibly uncomfortable. So teething is an uncomfortable process. When babies are teething, they tend to drool excessively. They tend to be more niggly and needy than usual. They might not sleep as well. They may have a low-grade fever, but not really more than 37.5 degrees Celsius. If it's above that, you need to think of other illnesses. So they definitely do get needy, and every kid is different. You have your oversensitive ones who may think this is the end of the world, and you may have your happy little Buddhas who think, oh, flip, what's that? Oh, it's a bit irritating, but I'll eat through it. But for most babies, their appetite also decreases a little bit, but not to the point where they're on a hunger strike. That's more likely to be an illness. A complete hunger strike, they won't do, because physiologically, they'll make sure they're getting enough food. But the myth here with teething is that, you know, for young babies, every time they put their hands in their mouths, people say, oh, they're teething, shame, they're teething. And that's not true, because hands on the mouth are part of a developmental stage. It's the oral stage of development, which happens from 3 months onwards. So actually, we see it as an excellent milestone if a three-month-old baby takes their hands together in the midline and shoves it into their mouths. That's a normal milestone. That's an oral stage of development. That's why everything goes to the mouth. They're also exploring with the mouth. So that's a myth. Hands in the mouth, that doesn't mean teething, but hands in the mouth plus other symptoms, irritability, a little bit of loss of appetite, low-grade fever, excessive drooling, that might mean teething. And then you have to soothe them with, you know, cold little teething rings and maybe a painkiller if it's really bad. But usually after 7 or 10 days, that little tooth has popped through and they are better. And this primary teething, getting your first teeth, your milk teeth, I almost say to parents, it's like having a mouth ulcer. You know, when you've got an ulcer in the mouth, it's just irritating. It's there all the time. You just can't get rid of it. And when you eat, it's more sore. And when you salivate, it's you know, you just want to produce more saliva. If you have a bit of pain relief, you feel a lot better for a time. But then that also goes away and you're better. And that's like teething. But when they develop their permanent teeth, the initial teething tract has already been established. So it's not like a great big thing has to bore through the gum and come all the way out like the primary teeth. Yeah. And as I said, it's a mystery of childhood. That's actually not very sore.
I always feel as well with smaller babies, obviously, they have no threshold for pain. They've never experienced pain before.
Yeah.
So their body might overreact a little bit when they start experiencing that. Yeah. And when they're older, obviously, they have fallen quite a few times.
Yeah, maybe. But I genuinely think it's a different biological thing, with a different pain associated. Yeah.
So as we might know, move on now. I feel that's already pretty good. The spoiling a baby, the teething. What do you feel there's some other myths like that parents often over and unnecessarily worry about in that first kind of year of babyness?
Sure, Lundi. There really are so many. But let's talk about something like developmental milestones. So say you've got little Johnny and he is 7 months old and he's not sitting yet. And yet little Sarah, your friend's daughter, has been sitting since 5 months. And then you start to worry that your child may have a motor developmental problem and they'll never be a good athlete and they'll always be a couch potato. So if you look at my book, for every age group, I put developmental milestones. And the interesting thing is that most milestones have quite a long interval. So sitting, for example, isn't 6 to 7 months. The normal range would be from 5 to 9 months. And it's only if your child isn't sitting by 9 months that you then think, okay, let me have them assessed in case there is something that we can intervene with. So I think that is quite a myth in the first year of life, saying they have to walk by 12 months. They don't. Yes, they should be walking by 20 months, but only half of kids are walking by 12 months. And if you've got a bottom shuffler instead of a crawler, then they'll probably only walk at 22 months. But to know that the milestones have a big range, but then also to know when it's the end of the range and your child hasn't reached it, that you then seek advice or medical attention. The other thing with milestones is, as I kind of alluded to, if you have a child who walked early, or it doesn't necessarily mean to say they're going to be an Olympic athlete. If you have a child who only walked at 20 months, they could still be an Olympic athlete. The same with talking. You know, my firstborn, who finished Patrick last year with straight A's, he hardly talked before the age of 2.5. Yet my daughter, my next one, was singing Happy Birthday by 15 months. And academically, there's actually no difference between the two. So don't stress about milestones unless they fall beyond the normal range.
Oh, and I mean, it really is sometimes, and again, that's like seeing the trees, not seeing the long game. And I think that's why these conversations are also so important, and books like these things are also important, because we don't want to take away from that worry. Because again, there is a line where you do need to start thinking
Absolutely.
About things like that for sure. That's why there are these parameters. But in the same breath, we also want parents to realize that in the bigger scheme of things, that one small thing might actually not be the... And I also see it with feeding, for instance, picky eaters.
Yeah.
My son, oh my word, the pickiest eater when he was a toddler. It was really, I mushed up his food for way too long, all sorts of things.
But that's also okay. That's also okay.
And he's the most adventurous eater now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even more so than my daughter, who was not a picky eater when she was
a baby.
She's a little bit more, not fussy, but she's a little bit more full of nonsense when it comes to eating now that she's older.
Interestingly, when we talk about developmental stages in the early days, there are also two further observations that I've noticed, you know, after examining thousands of kids. And the first one is that development often comes in steps. So it's not like a linear thing. So often you think, oh, flip, my child hasn't said another new word for the last 2 months. And then the next week they say 5 new words. And then it plateaus again and then it steps. And often while they're taking a step in one area of development, like speech, or so say a child starting to walk, then another area of development, like their speech or their fine motor, may stay flat for a bit because their body's kind of focusing on the walking. So it can be a stepwise thing with big jumps and then plateaus and then a big jump and then a plateau. Speech, especially, I call it like the aeroplane takeoff. It's slow, 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 slow as they're gathering speed. And then suddenly there's this huge jump and they're suddenly saying 50 new words in 1 week.
And then sometimes you wish for them to stop talking.
Sometimes, especially the why, tell me why stage. But everything does come in steps.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think again, this is exactly what these talks are about, is to give perspective and to make you worry a little bit less about those things that feel like it's the be all and end all in the moment that you're in.
And Yolandi, a big thing there is that we almost see our child's performance as our own achievement, isn't it? Wow. And that's a thing that we have to unlock immediately. It's not kudos to us that they're walking. It's not like a big, you know, naughty badge for us. It's a natural developmental process that would have occurred anyway in a nurturing environment. Wow. So we have to uncouple our kids' achievements, even from this young age, from our personas as early as possible. Otherwise, it leads to a lot of trouble and unnecessary expectations.
That's now a profound wisdom that I was not ready for.
Yeah, but you know,
it's wonderful. It's exactly that. You're so right. Mm. It is, but it is really something. Yeah. And it is from the start. I remember also with my own children sitting in like Pink Foot, like these developmental classes with them.
Yes.
And I'm like sitting there, it's like, how is my child not sleeping through? All these kids are sleeping Absolutely. Through, and you're like thinking it's something I'm doing.
Right. Wow. Exactly. Comparison is difficult. Yeah.
And I mean, these days it's even more difficult because with social media and all these things, it is literally constantly around you that you can compare,
and then you feel
that you're not this perfect mom and whatever. I always joke to my listeners and say to them, you should be glad that your parents were not the perfect parents, because that is something you don't want to live up to. And you shouldn't try to create that for your children, because that's what they're going to want to live up to.
Now, that is profound wisdom from your side as well, Yolandi, because if we are too perfect, our kids actually have difficulty, because then they may feel inadequate if we're trying to be too perfect. And I also say, you know, on social media, so on Facebook or Instagram, the pictures we see and the stories we see are people wearing, you know, their gold medals. That's their elite performances in their lives. And they look like a lovely swan gliding on the water. But don't forget that underneath that, the little legs are paddling madly in every single family. Believe me, it's not all golden and perfect.
For sure.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
If you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM. This is Bump and Beyond. And as always, we're talking parenting. And me and my guest, Professor Claudia Gray, we've been busting lots of myths that people have been talking about with development. And it's really been a great talk. Don't despair if you've missed it, because you do need to go listen to it. And she will have to come on my show again, because we're running out of time here, and we're only at toddlers now. But remember, you can go listen to this show on highfm.com. If you haven't downloaded our app, why not? You can go and listen to all the podcasts on the app, through the app. You can listen to us anywhere you are in the world. So please go download the app. That's the easiest thing to do. If you don't know how to, ask someone. Come to the studio and someone can show you how to download it. It's very easy to do. Dr. Gray, Professor Gray, I just want to say that because I love the fact that it's Gray. It feels it gives my show credibility to know that I have a professor on it. But like I said, we've now spoken about teething. We've spoken about late talking, late walking, all those type of things. But toddlers also come. I feel toddlers get such a bad rap. Terrible twos, and it's all the terrible and all the bad words go with toddlers.
Absolutely.
What are some of the myths that you feel that parents need to know about these not so terrible? It's also one of my favorite ages. That's why I don't understand why they get such a bad rap.
Shame. I think, you know, it's a most adorable age when they start talking and interacting and really being little people. Yes. But I always see toddlers as this massive swing. It's an oscillation. They're almost like teenagers, because they oscillate from this intense clinginess to fierce independence, and you never know which way they're going to go, and you kind of just have to be prepared to take it as it is, just like our teenagers, hey?
Yes, that's
But one of the myths, I guess, of being a toddler are the tantrums and calling them naughty. And really, tantrums are just an expression of frustration or anger, or, you know, it could be exacerbated by hunger or lack of routine. And the reason why it comes out in a tantrum is because they're not yet socially mature enough to handle it in a way which we expect older people to handle it. So actually, it's a very, very normal phenomenon of being a toddler. It's not naughtiness. It's when they are frustrated or angry and they don't know how else to express themselves. So out it comes as a little tantrum. It's just the same as a little baby crying, but now it's the crying with the arm movements and the flailing and throwing themselves down. And obviously we need to respond to this, not by giving them more attention, but by letting them know, look, mommy's here, you're safe, when you're ready to talk, I'm here. So the toddler tantrum is very misunderstood.
For me it's really misunderstood. Mm. I often tell parents, you have to remember that you're only emotionally mature around 24, 26 years of age.
Absolutely.
And most adults don't have control over their emotions. You see people having an adult tantrum
in
a traffic jam.
Absolutely.
So if adults struggle with this, you cannot blame a little tiny two-year-old who's experiencing this emotion for the first time to respond in the correct way. It takes about 1,000 times, I think, maybe 10,000 times that they need to respond before they start regulating a little bit better.
Wow, that's a big number. If that's, that's a big, big number. Yeah. No. And I guess during that time, it's our job not to immediately stop the tantrum. We try, we distract, but it's our job to make them feel safe. I can have a tantrum. Mommy will still love me. And actually, the more safe they feel, the quicker the tantrum will be over.
Yeah. And I mean, it is our jobs to also help to regulate them in the end of the day. And if you're going to get angry, frustrated, all those are also emotions and they are super emotionally in tuned. And if you're getting that, they're feeding off that anger, frustration and so much. And it's just going to fuel that fire. Absolutely. Again, this is not to make you scared knowing that, that you can cause this. It should make you feel empowered that you do have a little bit of a power to, as an adult, if you're over 26, to regulate your emotions.
To model the behavior. Yeah, monkeys see, monkey do, unfortunately, because monkey also see us on our cell phones all the time, and monkey see us also wanting information at the tip of our, you know, push of a button. So they're beyond tantrums. There's so many things that we are, myself included, modeling incorrectly. You know, even just this very notion of being so busy all the time. Copying that. So there is a lot to be said for looking at us again and going right back to basics to self-regulate so that we can help our toddlers self-regulate.
And I mean, this conversation could probably go on for hours and hours and hours on end. Again, we've only just come to the toddlers. We haven't even spoken about teens. We're going to have a whole show just about teens and talking about that. But again, I also just want to remind everyone, I'm not saying all of this, you're only human. Remember that we have our own little tantrums and we're on our own views. But luckily for us, we now have a new book. You can't see me pick it up, but I'm holding the book. At least Professor Gray can see me hold up the book.
Oh, thanks, Yolandi.
It really is such a beautiful book. Dr. Claudia, where can we find the book? Where can we find it?
Yeah, this book is my life's work and my life's passion. And I don't always get everything right, but there's a lot of information in there. You can get it from Exclusive Books, all good bookstores, and also online.
You can get it on Takealot, you said. Sorry, your sound went away there just now.
So you can get it all good bookstores and online at Takealot or Amazon. I think it's a really good idea as a baby shower book and for parents going through all the different stages.
Honestly, this is definitely going to be my – I don't have any friends who are having babies, unfortunately. I'm out of that. I'm now with the older children, but it definitely is a fantastic gift to give someone. In the end, it's like I've said it before. You know, you need to go for CPR classes and those type of things because once you have a certain amount of information, you can be a lot more regulated. and calmer in a situation when it comes up. And I really feel this is what this book gives you. Gives you a lot of information to know how to deal in a specific age group so that when those things happen, that you feel a little bit more calmer because you know about it. Also, Dr. Claudia, you are on social media, right?
Yes. Yes, okay. I am. Probably not as active as I should be, but I want to become more active. Dr. Claudia Gray.
Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Claudia Gray, Professor Claudia Gray.
Yes, Gray was
wonderful, wonderful having you.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I appreciate
Thanks.
That. Cheers,
Bye.
Guys. Bye.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
And just like that, another show has come to an end. It was a great show today. I busted. I learned also quite a bit of things. I feel I'm going to have a slightly more compassion with teething than what I've had before. I've been maybe a little bit harsh about it. I've learned a lot today about various myths from different ages. And again, it was wonderful speaking to my guest, Professor Claudia Gray, about her new book, Real Parenting and Pediatrics, which is available online as well as in any good bookstore like Exclusive Books. As always, please remember, you don't need to be sad if you missed a show. This show and all of my shows, there's a really great library of different topics that we've created already as podcasts on hivefm.com for you to go listen to my show. And all of the shows are available as podcasts for you to go listen to. And again, a great library on different topics when it comes to parenting. Sometimes I think we can be a little bit harsh on ourselves when it comes to being parents, but things like these books from Dr. Gray really does help us to navigate through these things. Please keep in mind that nothing in life is not meant to be done alone. And we should use the resources, the reliable resources that we have to help navigate us through this thing that is called parenting, because it is super hard. And even though something might feel very, very overwhelming at the moment, more often than not, this too shall pass. I look forward to next week's conversation as I speak to one of my favorite guests that I've had on before. I'm going to be talking about diabetes. It was actually Diabetes Month, I think, in November now. So I've missed it because the show is going to be in December. But I'm going to be talking to Kath McGaw. She's a dietitian, and she's also wrote the book Weaning Sense and lots of different books on feeding your child. And we're going to be talking about diabetes. So I'm very much looking forward to that conversation. Thank you so much for listening to me, Yolandi Becker, on Bump and Beyond. As always, like I mentioned, go out there and be kind.